You're with Joseph Arthur and his Technicolor Dreamcast on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
An advertisement posted to Twitter by the team behind Minds.com, a free speech-friendly social network, has been blackballed by the platform. Minds CEO Bill Ottman says that the ad was labeled inappropriate, adding, "This is what we expect from Twitter, so it's nothing new, it's just very funny and over-the-top case." The ad is for Minds Festival of Ideas, an annual political conference featuring a range of voices from across the political spectrum. The event takes place this Saturday at New York's Beacon Theater. Beacon Theater is massive. So yeah, so Twitter blackballed Minds.com's ad. Minds CEO Bill Ottman told the Post Millennial that their ad on Twitter, a company that directly competes with the free speech platform, was rejected immediately. The rejection email came immediately after pressing the submit button on the promotion, which makes it feel like it wasn't reviewed by a human, said Ottman. It was deemed inappropriate instantly by an account restriction or maybe some AIML trigger. There's nothing close to inappropriate in the post, and this is what we expect from Twitter, so it's nothing new. It's just a very funny and over-the-top case. The tweet, which Minds attempted to promote, said the following: Minds Festival is proving that people with opposing views still want to have productive conversations and have a good time together. The speaking event aims to foster dialogues between people of differing ideological perspectives. The event features a wide range of thinkers and political figures, including former Democratic presidential candidate Tulsi Gabbard, undercover journalism pioneer James O'Keefe, academic Dr. Cornel West, musician and podcaster Zuby, shout out Zuby, author and pundit Mahid Nawaz, journalist and podcast host Tim Pool, I love Tim Pool, academic Coleman Hughes, anti-racism activist Daryl Davis, leftist streamer Stephen Bunnell, journalist Libby Emmons, YouTuber Blair White, former Reason editor-in-chief Nick Gillespie, and comedian Ryan Long. Well, I look forward to the days when freedom will be restored. I don't know if this is a hangover from old Twitter policy and things will change once Musk hopefully takes over, but stories like this are getting tired at this point. The free flow of ideas is the only base a democracy can be built on, and the fact that it's still being disallowed feels so regressive and insane. And hard to take seriously, like people trying to hold on to a control they've already lost, where every move they make has the opposite effects of its intention. At this point, continued repression is like soil for the blooming of the awakening. Why are they so afraid of ideas, of words, of people expressing a wide range of perspectives? That's a rhetorical question. Of course, I know the answer. Control and power and subjugation, creating a nation of slaves the world over, nations of slaves, in fact. But reading things like this doesn't really make me angry as much as it makes me roll my eyes and think, who are the ones attempting to hold on to this level of control that in no way they will be able to pull off? The sleeping masses are kicking now in their sleep, and alarms are going off all the time. The amount of young people dying daily now in their sleep of supposedly natural causes has reached ridiculous proportions, and the ones pretending to not know the cause of most of them are sounding more and more insane all the time. It can't last. The lost reporting on a series of deaths, professional athletes, one 25, the other 26, football stars, and at the same time displaying images of crying children getting their first shots, feels triggering on purpose. The unrest and unease of it, the devastation staring us in the face, and then trying to silence something as simple as a debate with people who already have massive followings whose voices are getting out anyway. It makes no sense. It feels more like a provocation, like being in a toxic relationship with someone who's just trying to trigger you so that you reflect the unease that exists within them, so that you reflect their shame, so that they can blame their internal unease on something or someone external. It feels like that. You're listening to TNT.
Stay up to date on the latest news.
I follow the news pretty much throughout the day.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Timothy Shea from the Magna Institute is back on the show. He's a political pundit and an activist buried deep behind enemy lines. Timothy Shea is back on the program. Oh, yeah. Timothy Shea is back to discuss some current events. Welcome, Timothy Shea. Hello, Timothy.
Hello, Joseph. Great to be back on with you. Thanks for that
great
lyrical intro.
You're welcome, sir. You're welcome. Thanks for coming back on the program. So I wanted to get your take on what you think of DeSantis, because he's been making quite a lot of noise. And I was listening. Do you ever follow Nino, Nino's Corner, the ex-heavyweight champion? David Rodriguez is his name. He's quite a big YouTuber.
Yeah, I love him.
Yeah, he's fun. And I mean, his sister was actually on the show. I think he's supposed to come on the show soon. But he was talking today about how he doesn't trust Ron DeSantis, like, because Ron is like making a lot of waves and there's all this like good energy around him, you know, potentially being the main presidential candidate. And his point was, the press is getting behind him, so that makes him suspicious of him. And really only that reason. It's not, he wasn't really judging his character. He was just saying, because of the press's endorsement of Ron, he finds it suspicious. So that's kind of an interesting angle, because I'll tell you what, the press campaign on him has been working on me. He came out saying that he would do everything opposite of what Biden has done with energy in America. And then he came out speaking out against tyranny and Marxist agendas as a result of the election in Brazil. And so he was just sounding like he could waltz right into the White House. And I was kind of buying it hook, line, and sinker. And then I listened to Nino and he's like, no, you're supposed to think that. And that's the con. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting take. We say that if you want to know what's true these days, just watch CNN and flip everything 180 degrees.
Right? Yeah. What is CNN saying then? Yeah.
Yeah. So how do you know that? How do you know that something on Facebook was true? Because fact checkers say it was false, right? So
it's
I understand Nino's take, and that is the game. Look, the media always, you know, Adam Kinziger and Liz Cheney are saints now. And when Ronald Reagan died, they said, oh, you know, if only we had Republicans like Reagan again. And when George Herbert Walker Bush died, said, you know, there aren't any more Republicans like them anymore. And John McCain, and Democrats only love Republicans that cave to Democrats. It's as simple as that. Their idea of bipartisanship is surrendering and giving them everything they want. That's bipartisanship in the Democrat mind.
Mitch McConnell.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Right.
Ron DeSantis, I have a friend down in Tampa area. Ron played baseball with my friend's son, so he's known him since he was a teenager. Serves on a couple of his Veterans Affairs boards. And he really likes Ron. He said he's a man of solid character. I think it's interesting that, and I wouldn't be surprised if there's a game that Ron is running with Trump, that it's kind of a 1-2 punch. Ron says, I'll take some heat from you so you can lay low and the focus will be off you for a while. And, you know, he's like the stalking horse. You know what a stalking horse is? It's the horse that runs out to the lead in a racehorse, and everybody else sets their pace according to that pace setting horse. And then they all finish strong. They save their energy, let the stalking horse go out first. And then they make a mad dash around the final turn down this home stretch. So it could be that. It could be that Ron really wants the office, even though he says he doesn't. He wants to remain as governor of Florida for another term, which I believe he's running this fall, and he'll get it. What I thought was interesting was that Andrew Gillum was indicted today by the Joe Biden's DOJ. So I guess it's a two-tier justice system only if you win offices as a Democrat. If Gillum had won, he never would have been indicted. But since he lost, he's expendable. And now the Democrats can say, see, we prosecute corruption no matter where it occurs. He was indicted for wire fraud and basically money laundering, campaign donations through a private corporation into his own personal pocket.
So like a sacrificial lamb kind of thing.
Yeah, he's a sacrificial lamb. They threw him under the bus because he's a nobody, right? He doesn't even hold office anymore. Just like one of the mules, one of the 2,000 mules got arrested, right? So they do these little token arrests of actual criminals. They're not token criminals. right? It's not like a show trial like we're having up in D.C. But right. You know, how come they never go after any of the big fish?
Well, who knows? I mean, I guess the other thing is, like, you know, maybe they're working together, Trump and DeSantis. But the other thing could be that the Democrats are, like, promoting DeSantis to, like, you know, wreck Trump's campaign that way. That's the other theory.
Well, yeah. And the other thing they do is they'll promote the promote the Republican that they know will lose in November. Right. So they'll get the Republican base all ginned up to elect somebody by portraying them as this big conservative when they know that they're going to lose in November. So the primary results yesterday were pretty interesting. Trump had an up and down day. As I said a couple of weeks ago on the show, his endorsements aren't based on any core principles. They're based on who he thinks is going to win. And Mo Brooks, unfortunately, structurally ran a very poor campaign. And he ended up losing 2-1. Well, that's, you know, Trump pulled his support from Mo Brooks, who had been one of his stalwarts, standing up for the fact that the election was stolen, which we know now pretty much to a certainty that it was stolen. And Mo Brooks was one of his strongest allies. He threw Mo under the bus and gave his full and total endorsement to Katie Britt, who last year he said we didn't need because she was a top aide to Richard Shelby, who is one of the worst senators going. He's one of these Republicans that people call rhinos, right, that I just call GOPE, establishment GOP. So he flips from Mo Brooks, his ally, to Katie Brooks, his quote-unquote enemy. But he did it because he knew she was going to win, and she won, right? Okay, so good. But then he backed a lot of people in Georgia that lost. It's just, you know, it's sad to see him treating politics like a popularity contest and not something that matters.
Hasn't he always done that though? I mean, he's you know, his ego is pretty thin, you know. It just seems like he's kind of always been like that. He wants to be on the side that's winning no matter what.
Well, he doesn't. Look, who doesn't like winning, right? But the point is, if you want to lead a revolution, and that's why he ran in 2016 to lead a revolution, he said it right in that beautiful inauguration speech, which was one of the best inaugural addresses ever. And you knew it was great because the media all panned it and called it dark and depressing. And it was nothing of the kind. And he said, well, you know, this is to take power away from these people behind me and return it to the people. That's what this is going to be about. Which I thought was fantastic. So you think he's going to be leading this movement. Well, then he gets out of office and now it's a popularity contest. And where's, you know, the movement people aren't behind him. My friend Amy Kramer worked hard against him in Georgia. So anyway, he backed Vernon Jones, former Democrat who ran. Now, disclaimer, I greeted Vernon when he came off the stage down on the Ellipse on January 6th, and I welcomed him home. He was up on stage and he said, I'm leaving the Democrat Party and I'm becoming a Republican. I shook his hand. I said, welcome home, alluding to the fact that the Republican Party was the traditional party of Black Americans up until the 1930s. And I mean, the first Blacks elected to Congress were Republicans, etc. And I really had high hopes for Vernon. And then the more and more we found out about him, you know, my partner, Brooke McGowan, and I did not certify him as a MAGA Institute certified America First candidate.
Why is
and
that?
Because we didn't like what we found out about him.
And what'd you find out?
Personal stuff, you know, things with women.
We all have things with women.
Domestic violence. Yeah, some domestic violence.
Yeah.
You know, just some unsavory stuff. And I got word through a back channel that his plan was to get a whole bunch of young Black Democrats to run as Republicans to kind of take over the Republican Party and remake it. Now, we want to take over the Republican Party and remake it, but not as a Democrat party. We want to remake it as an America First party. So we just
How would you do that? How do you go about doing that?
Taking over the party?
Yeah, well, remaking it as an American First party. How would you? What would? Well, what yeah, changes
I
mean, would
as
you?
We discussed, I think, last week. You go, you take over your precinct, your local precinct. You go down with 10 or 15 friends because you joke that you don't have 10 or 15 friends.
Who does?
And well, like-minded individuals, let's call them then. And right. And you go when there's an election and you take over your town committee or your, you know, I served on our town committee in Massachusetts or your precinct committee or however it's organized in your state. And then you get a bunch of precincts together and you take over your county GOP and you get enough counties together. You can take over your state GOP. You do it from the bottom up. But.
What principles are you focusing on? I guess was really more the question. I remember that part of the answer, but in terms of the people that you're wanting to support, what principles do you want them to uphold?
Business friendly environment, get rid of all these regulations that are designed to do nothing except stifle business. American energy independence, election security, border security, the traditional MAGA issues that people associated with President Trump. And I think people are seeing now, you know, when they're paying $9 for a pound of hamburger, they realize that.
And a gallon of gas.
Policies matter.
Now, what do you think about defining it as MAGA? Do you think there's too much baggage there? I mean, have you thought about renaming it or do you want to keep it MAGA? And is Trump your guy?
Well, Trump is our guy until he decides not to run. But that doesn't mean that we're quote unquote Trump humpers, that we worship him, right? We've called out the president for a year and a half now on these vaccines. When he does things with which we don't agree, we're going to call him out. And a lot of the people that drank the Trump Kool-Aid, they're as bad as the leftists, right? You cannot say one thing against him. No, they will brook no criticism. And if you disagree with anything, you're a rhino and you're a traitor and blah, blah, blah. No, no, no. That's not what politics is, people. It's great that he brought you to politics in 2015, 2016, but you've been here for a cup of coffee. Learn about how it works before, you know, that's not a popularity contest. And just because we like this guy doesn't mean that everything that he does is, you know, gospel. So, yeah, he's our guy until he decides he's not going to run. But the principles remain, right? Amy Cramer said this week, look, we were around a long time before President Trump got involved in politics, and we're going to be involved a long time after he leaves the stage. So if we don't stick to our principles, we're going to have nothing. And, you know, I agree with Amy on that point. So the traditional, what used to be seen as traditional Republican issues, they're not anymore because the Republican Party has moved so far left, but election security, border security, financial security, it basically needs to really become the working and middle class party, which is kind of what it was all along, even though the Democrats like to portray themselves as that. But what they did is they created a party of extreme wealthy elites and extreme poor people who are dependent on the government for their daily bread. And the Republicans were left with everything else. Meanwhile, the Democrats were painting the Republicans as these big cigar chopping, big business guys. And that's never been the reality. The reality has always been it's a party of small businesses, which are the economic engine of this country, as you know, in middle class and when working class people that aren't on the government dole, people that work hard for a living, plumbers, contractors, truck drivers, et cetera. And that's really Trump's audience. And that's who the Republican Party needs to start representing.
How do you ensure election security at this point? I mean, are they going to, you know, implement some changes, some meaningful changes?
It's all down to the state secretaries of state who run elections in the various states. Yeah, I think it's very telling. people say, hey, but the Republicans are about election security. Are they really? They raised $300 million for election security efforts after the 2020 election. Joseph, do you know how much they spent on election security?
How much?
Zero.
$10.
Dollars.
Not zero even dollars. $10.
Not even $10. Now, they did make a pledge to one of the guys that was working out in Arizona on the Maricopa audit. And why does Maricopa County matter? Because Maricopa County is more populous than a whole lot of states, right? So if you can steal an election in Maricopa County, it's like stealing an election in seven or eight states.
Right.
The proviso was they made a $5 million pledge to fund the audit, provided they didn't use Jovan's results. Why on earth would the Republicans not want data that proves that fraudulent mail-in ballots were used? Because Jovan is the guy, if people don't know him, Jovan Pulitzer is the guy that invented the QR code. You use Jovan's technology 100 times a day on your phone, and you don't even realize it. Every time you go, remember when you used to load a web page on your phone and it was kind of wonky, it didn't really fit?
Yeah.
He's the guy that created the software to optimize computer web pages for phones and tablets.
God bless the man.
No matter what device you look, it works, right? He invented the QR code. The guy's a genius. He's a certified genius. And he has optical scanning technology that every time you scan a ballot in through a ballot counting machine, right, it makes an optical picture of it. Just like if you were taking a picture of the ballot with your phone. So or as it scans in, it makes a picture. Well, he can look at those pictures. He doesn't even need to see the ballots. He just needs to look at the pictures. And when you fold a piece of paper, right, paper is made up of fibers, and fibers have direction, right? They're like little lines of material, right? They're little threads. And when you fold it, like if you crease a piece of paper, it's always going to have that fold mark, right? Even if you iron it, you're still going to see that that piece of paper had been folded. Well, he can look at the optical images and tell whether the ballot that was scanned through had been folded. And he found thousands and thousands and thousands of quote-unquote mail-in ballots that had never been folded. Well, that's impossible because all mail-in ballots are folded to be mailed in. So how could these mail-in ballots not have been ever been folded? And now, why would the Republican Party not want that evidence to come to light? Why would they condition a $5 million grant for election security to not include evidence that proves a fraudulent election? So the GOP is not our friend.
Yikes. Timothy Shea, we got to take a quick break. We'll be right back to discuss more. I wonder who you think the Democratic candidate's going to be, because I don't think it's going to be Sleepy Joe. We'll be right back with these words on TNT.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
The 2020 election was the most secure in U.S. history.
There has been no evidence of widespread voter fraud.
He lost a fair and secure election.
The most secure
election in American history.
Really?
All those of you who volunteered and worked the polls, you deserve a special thanks from the entire nation.
This one mule made 53 trips to 20 drop boxes. He's not alone. We tracked 2,000 mules making multiple ballot drops. Leaving no fingerprints. Snap snapping photos to get paid. A coordinated ring of illegal vote harvesting in all the key states where the election was decided.
They've delivered us a clear victory.
Game over.
Stream at Salem Now or Locals.
Get breaking news on your phone when it happens. Download our app from the Google Play and App Store now.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
This life is going insane. This world is losing its mind. It's your life is yours to define. The faith that your freedom can find. Don't you give it up. Keep going, keep going, keep going. Don't you give it up. Keep going, keep going, keep going.
That's my new jam I'm working on, Timothy. Wanted to give you a little taste of it. Yeah, we gotta keep the spirit up. So, exactly, bro. So the Supreme Court okays the use of public money for religious education. What's your take on that? By 6-3.
I think it's great because the overarching principle is that, look, the First Amendment prohibition against creating a state religion was not to protect the state against religions. It was to protect the churches against intrusion by the state, right? Mm-hmm. So in that regard, anytime there's federal dollars that are going to private religious organizations, for example, the Catholic Charities and the Lutheran Refugee Placement Services, right? They're taking billions of dollars from the government to place refugees around the country that aren't really refugees. So that's problematic, right? And so in that regard, people can see this decision as problematic, is government would have a means to control the content of that education. You know, even though you're a Catholic school, you got to teach the LGBTWTF agenda, or, you know, have a tranny book club or whatever. I don't think that's going to happen. I see this as a very huge win for inner city parents. It doesn't matter what race or ethnicity you are. It doesn't matter what political party you are. If you are a parent with children in an urban public school, you're doing them a disservice because these schools are not teaching even the basics, right? And they're war zones, most of them. You got to go through a metal detector to get to school. So I like the idea of a voucher system across the board. I think that every parent in America, if we're going to have a Department of Education, I don't think we should, but if we're going to have a Department of Education, and if we're going to use federal tax dollars to fund kindergarten through 12 education, then give every parent in the country a voucher per child and let them spend it wherever they want. If that's at the local public school, if you live in a town with a great local public school, super. Give the voucher to the public school, and that's how the public school can be funded, right? But if the public school's not doing a good job, you take that money out of their budget and you give it to St. Stanislaus's or a charter school or wherever you think that your child would be best educated. So I see this as a tremendous victory for parents, and I'd like to see it expanded.
It goes against the sort of Marxist agenda that people in this sort of truther community are always talking about. This kind of messes up our narrative a little bit. It's like, wait a minute. So there does seem to be a shift occurring, and this seems to be emblematic of that shift. I do want to say, I think you have to be careful using words like, you know, tranny and stuff like that, because you don't want to come off as hateful or anything like that. And I can understand the sort of vitriol behind an agenda that promotes those ideas to two young children. But I do think you got to kind of be careful around language, around those kind of things.
But isn't that what they call it?
I think that's a derogatory term at this point. I think it would be more like a transgender person and just being, I don't know, maybe, okay, yeah, you know, just.
fair enough. But when they first came out, I think they were calling themselves Tranny Book Club.
Well, really? Is that right?
I might be wrong. Well, I mean,
you might be right.
Started 5 years ago.
This started five years ago. Yeah, I think things change all the time with those things. You got to keep up to date. But I know it gets. I know it's odd and everything like that. You know, but I'm just saying. Like,
you know how Facebook pops up with posts that you've had in the past as a memory?
Yeah.
I'm in the gulag now for 30 days because I posted a meme that said you've received a suicide request from Hillary Clinton. But my memory popped up and it was from 5 years ago and it said, I'm so old, I remember when blowing a tranny meant that you downshift, you were going too fast when you downshifted.
And that's what put you into the gulag. So you got to be careful.
No, that actually didn't.
That didn't.
I thought they were going to tack another 30 on for that one, but they showed that to me as my memory. So,
well, what do you think, man? Do you think this is like evidence that there's a shift occurring outside of this sort of endless Marxism that we've been facing?
Well, first of all, I think there's clearly a shift in the court. And the fact that this is a 6-3 decision is significant because it means that Kavanaugh and Coney Barrett and Roberts were finally on the right side of an important issue. I think the bigger shift, Joseph, is occurring within our culture. And that's why I'm very pleased by, I want to get back to these election results in Virginia. They elected... Okay. A number of women got through the primary. They're going to face their Democratic challengers in the fall. One woman is a military wife, and she's also a former law enforcement officer herself. And her parents immigrated here legally from Guatemala. I think that the more the Republican Party embraces people with the values that we all share, because as we mentioned, the first show we did together, there's so much more that binds us than divides us. We have so much more in common with each other. Rich or poor, black, white, or brown, doesn't matter what part of the country, northeast, southwest, southeast, we have more in common with our fellow Americans of all political and ethnic and religious stripes than we do the wedge issues that Democrats use to try to divide us. And I think that the more that we can engage people in a values conversation,
right?
Because
we're probably not far apart with values actually. And it's just really like, super, super extreme social justice issues that just create this sort of division and emotional scream campaigns online that take up so much space. But really, most Americans, I think, have common sense values that are pretty aligned.
Yeah, and if we engage people on a human level, on a values level, and especially we engage people in minority communities, because black people and Hispanic people are culturally very conservative. They're church-going. Do you know what state?
They love Jesus. I'm with them.
Do you know what state donates the most to charity on a per capita basis?
What?
Blow you away. Our poorest state, Mississippi.
Wow.
Because it's also one of the most church-going states.
Right. That's interesting.
Right? And it's also, they elect Republicans, but it's also a heavily Democratic state as well. I mean, it's Mississippi's got a heavy Democrat representation, especially among blacks there. But when you engage people on values, you get them to see for themselves that, you know what? I really am more conservative than this Democrat party is. I might not be as conservative as Donald Trump, but I'm more conservative than this Democrat party is. And I think that if we can, they talk about a big tent. Their idea of the big tent is watering down our values to pander to people to get their votes. Well, that's not the way to do it. right? The way to do it,
that's true,
is to stand up for principles and attract people based on your principles and the fact that you're willing to stand up for them.
Well, traditional values have been demonized. You know, even if you speak on them, it's assumed that you're hateful towards people that don't follow lifestyles like that. And for me, that's not true. I think those traditional values empower people, and they're good for those reasons. If you follow different values than that, I wish you the best, and I don't have hate for you, and I hope you create a successful life. I don't, you know, period. But it's like you can't really promote the ideas of traditional values anymore, or it's become much more difficult to do so, which is why I bring up the point of, like, you know, those of us who want to promote those ideas, I think, have to be extra vigilant to not get roped into the narrative of being hateful. You see what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Even though I don't think
me on that.
Yeah, and I don't think you are hateful, but or anything, and it's just like,
no, you know, and that's what they try to do, right? The phobia,
exactly,
like transphobic,
Now,
or you're homophobic.
Well, exactly. Like, so
no,
that's why you have to
people.
Be right. So exactly, and you know, so that's why you have to be extra cautious. But anyway,
yeah,
not to belabor that point. But so, who do you think will be the Democratic nomination for president?
You know, it's so hard to prognosticate, really, because
I know.
There's so many games being played. You know, they set up trial balloons and they, like I said, they use stalking horses and whatnot. But I dubbed her in 2016 the most dangerous Democrat in America, and
Hillary Clinton.
I'm sticking to it. No, Tulsi Gabbard.
You don't like her,
and Tulsi?
Ooh, we're gonna fight now because I like her. What what don't you like about her?
Here's
I love her.
Thing.
I'm
As
in love with
woman?
Her. No, I'm kidding. I'm over exaggerating. Yeah. I'm in love with Tulsi now. But I do like
As
her
a
lot.
Woman?
And she, you know, she speaks her mind. She speaks outside of the agreed upon narrative. She's you know, she's got balls, you know, so to speak.
She
you
does.
Know, she's got real
and
courage.
As a
she's
human
got real
being,
courage.
As a person, as a woman, I love her. I have tremendous respect for her service to this country. I think that she has integrity. I think that she has a very firm grasp on issues. But, you know, why is Tulsi on Fox so much, right? Why is Tulsi being promoted so much? I saw it with Obama. I was helping our then state senator, Scott Brown in Massachusetts, before he won the special election for Ted Kennedy's seat after Ted died in 2010. He was my state senator, and I was working on his campaign with him, and we're there, and we were folding, you know, stuffing envelopes while we watched the DNC keynote address. And as soon as it ended, I said, "That's the most dangerous Democrat in America." And
why?
Scott said, "Why?" And I said,
"I'm glad me and Scott are great minds that think alike."
Yeah, you are. I said, "Because he's going to be president in 4 years." And Scott laughed. He goes, "Timbo, there's no way somebody can go from my office," because Scott was a state senator, just like Obama was a state senator back in 2004. "No way somebody can go from my office to the Oval Office in one election cycle." And I said, "Scott, watch, they're going to do it." Sure enough, that year he ran for U.S. Senate against Jack Ryan. Mysteriously, Ryan's divorce file was leaked. And all the stuff came, the allegations that his wife, actress Jerry Ryan, had made against him, the sexual stuff was in the public, and boom, now Obama's a U.S. senator. He does nothing as U.S. senator, and then bam, he's president. One cycle, I called it. I see them doing the same thing to Tulsi, and I saw her, you know, I saw the same signs in her that I saw in Obama in 04, I saw in Tulsi in 16, and even more so now. At heart, she's a Bernie bro, right? I don't like Bernie's policies. And that's what it comes down to. That's why I think Tulsi's a wolf in sheep's clothing, because she's going to be the kinder, gentler way to get socialism in.
I don't know. She seems to speak out against all those narratives, though. Like, you know, Bernie kind of acquiesces, whereas Tulsi's, like, you know, vilified. by the Democrats at this point. I mean, she gets harangued on The View, you know, like she's harangued on The View. You can just look at The View. The View hates her. They did a whole episode just like trying to, you know, trash talk her. So, I mean, you might be right, Joseph. Yeah, well, there you go. Now you're talking like Nino. This is a Nino theory right here. This is like, which is, you know, probably true. But, you know, I'm entertained by him too. He's great. But listen, it's weird because I guess I'm not really a conspiracy theorist at heart because I sort of just buy into believing what I'm being shown by these people. I mean, I am in as much as like the COVID stuff and the injections and all that. To me, that stuff's ridiculous. But when I think about like controlled opposition and people talk about, oh, Russell Brand's actually controlled opposition, I just don't buy it. Like, I see the possibility of things like that, but it just seems hard to fathom that people controlled opposition.
I'm not a conspiracy theorist. Yeah, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I've been around politics for over 50 years. I've seen a lot from both sides. I see the games that are played. The only difference between a conspiracy theory and acknowledged fact now is 12 to 18 months.
6 months.
Right? CNN is now admitting that the COVID numbers, COVID probably wasn't as bad as the tests made it out to be.
Duh.
Right.
That's crazy.
Meanwhile, we got people like Tony Siragusa dropping dead at age 55 mysteriously.
Well, yeah.
People are dropping dead left and right.
Exactly. It's hard to cover up. And then at the same time, they're rolling out injections for 6-month-year-olds, but that's, as Emed G just told me, because it takes away their liability if they approve it for children. And I hadn't known that because it seems so odd to me. Like, how are they rolling these out for 6-month-year-olds now when all these deaths are coming up and Justin Bieber's face is freezing and all this evidence that this is obviously not safe and effective. And then they're rolling
it out to 6-month-olds. Because believe it or not, the state of emergency still exists. It's still not licensed. It's only approved under an EUA. And believe it or not, even though COVID is long over in terms of it being a health crisis, there's still COVID around, but it's not the crisis that they want it to be. But the EUA is still active because the state of emergency has not been canceled.
All right. Well, what are we going to talk about when we come back on our last, you know, 5 or 15 or 13 or 10 minutes? We got to go to
Let's talk about what you got going on out there.
In Arizona. All right. We'll talk about Arizona when we come back after these words on TNT.
Here we go again. Less than a decade to prevent catastrophic global warming. Michael Mann says so.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
What better way than to panic people by telling them they have less than 10 years in which to act on global warming? Here is ClimateGate professor Michael Mann explaining the latest 10-year tipping point.
We have less than a decade now to bring carbon emissions down globally by 50%.
Yes, you heard that right. Despite the fact that the UN issued a climate tipping point in 1989 of 10 years, which expired in 1999, and the Green New Deal's founder, AOC, issued a 12-year tipping point just a few years ago. In fact, the earliest known climate tipping point is 1869. 1864, when Abraham Lincoln was still president. An academic warned of climatic excess unless man changed his evil ways. The more things change, the more they stay the same. For the Morano Minute, this is Mark Morano on TNT Radio.
Using meth taught me everything about freedom, only not like you think. It taught me how easy it is to lose your freedom. If you think meth is taking control of you, ask for help. You have the power to be truly free. I know. I'm Jan, and I'm free from meth.
If you or someone you know is struggling with meth, call 1-800-662-HELP for 24-hour free and confidential treatment referral. Learn more at samhsa.gov/meth.
As Joe Biden negotiates his way out of the room,
we don't negotiate with the truth.
We mandate that the truth be told. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And we're back with Timothy Shea. Giuliani told Arizona official, we just don't have the evidence for voter fraud. That was in The Guardian one day ago. What do you think?
I really, you know, I you know, when a boxer stays around too long, he hangs around too long and kind of tarnishes his legacy being a stumble bum the last few. I mean, I think Rudy, God love him, I think he jumped the shark when his hair dye was dripping down his face in Philly. Remember that?
Life gets stressful. Life gets stressful. Sometimes you put too much dye in your head.
I like Rudy. His son's running for governor of New York, and unfortunately, I don't think he stands a chance.
Mm.
We will
well,
see.
Well, what did you want to talk about? What specifically about Arizona did you want to key in on?
Well, I think Arizona is a key battleground state, right? We interviewed Dr. Paul Gosar, who's one of your representatives out there. Wendy Rogers is a friend, one of your state senators. Carrie Lake is running for governor, and I'm surprised that President Trump hasn't endorsed her already, because I think clearly she's going to be the Republican nominee.
And probably your
next governor. And Carrie's fantastic. So why isn't Trump behind her? I mean, Vernon Jordan, right? So he won 3-1 with Britt against Mo Brooks in Alabama, but Vernon Jordan lost 4-1, right? His opponent got 75% of the vote. A couple guys and other people in Georgia that he had backed lost big 2-1 margins, which in these days, a 2-1 margin is huge. 4-1 is unheard of. 3-1 is almost unheard of. But Arizona's got it all going on. I think that if you guys get your election squared away, and what that means, you asked what election security means. What election security means is, ideally, paper, you know, I'd like to see paper ballots with purple thumbs, right? Once you vote, you put your thumb in the ink pot. You can't go vote again. But I think that we got to get these machines out. The machines themselves can be programmed. We definitely need to cut them off from Wi-Fi. I think that every polling place should have a Wi-Fi jammer, right? Just like when you go to a Trump rally, your cell phones won't work. You can't get, because they've got jammers unless you pay the $8 for the Wi-Fi through their system. And I think we need to do that at all polling places. You want to spend money on election equipment? Great. Get every place a Wi-Fi jammer so the machines can't be on the internet.
Why do you think Trump hasn't endorsed Carrie Lake? Because I know she's been appealing for that a lot. You know, even on Twitter, I think I've seen a lot of tweets where she's like big upping Trump and sort of trying to get that seal of approval. And she is certainly, you know, the biggest candidate out here by far. And, you know, I just found out recently, too, Mesa, where I live, is the most conservative city in America. Interesting.
Yeah, I visited Mesa about 15 years ago. Loved it out there. Beautiful town.
It's beautiful.
The president has gotten into the habit of making late endorsements once he knows who's going to win. And ironically, so that's what he does with Mehmet Oz in Pennsylvania, right? Guess who's distancing himself from Trump now? Mehmet Oz.
Right.
Like, oh yeah, well he endorsed me, but I didn't really want that endorsement. That didn't really mean that much. And you know, because he's trying to race to the middle for the general. But the president's not coming in until it's clear who's going to win.
Right. You said earlier, Timothy, that you were like talking about schools being war zones. They have to like walk through metal detectors. But don't you think that kind of security is necessary these days? Because, you know, I mean, it's just we can't deal with another school shooting. I feel like that kind of security we need to implement more without making it seem like a prison. But single point entry and exit and armed guards seems like a logical step to me.
Yeah, it's just the problem with the metal detectors isn't really keeping bad guys from outside out. It's keeping bad guys that are enrolled as students from bringing in their weapons, right? That's what I mean about war zones. It's like these public schools, especially in urban areas where the test scores are so low, they're so low because no teaching is going on. Because, I mean, we've seen the videos on YouTube about what goes on in classrooms and the bullying and even the girls are vicious and violent. And you know, parents just don't want their children in that kind of environment. They want them in an environment that's conducive to learning. And that's what we need as a country. We need our next generation to be smart. We don't need idiocracy to be a prophecy come true.
Well, they're dumbing us down on purpose, man, because it makes us easier to control. I saw a girl on the playground the other day. Huh?
It's the Twinkies.
What'd you say? It's the Twinkies.
It's the Twinkies. Yeah.
Well, it is that too. I mean, we need God, and we need great education. We need values like that. Like I said, I think those things empower people. They give people a moral center. I saw a girl on the playground bully a little guy the other day because I have a daughter that I take on the playground all the time, and it was disturbing. She kicked him in the butt, and I was like, oh, it reminded me of childhood, how violent childhood could be. You know, kids are rough. And I can't imagine living around these days, these times, where it's just there's so much insanity afoot.
Yeah, well, the best thing you can do for your daughter is to never give her a cell phone.
Yeah, you're right about that. Yeah.
Keep her, if you give her one, make it an old-fashioned flip phone where she can call mom and dad, but she can't be on the internet.
Because that's true.
That's where kids are just getting derailed. You know, my daughter, when she was in pre-K, there was a boy in her class that was biting. So we did, you know, the nice thing, and we went in and talked to the head of the school, and we talked to the teacher, and we tried to, you know, do.
Uh-oh. It happened again. Oh, no. Well, we got a few minutes left. I don't know what to do. Timothy, are you back? I got a couple minutes. There you go. You're back.
This is a two-minute story.
I was reaching for my guitar. Okay, go ahead. We lost you for a second.
It's a two-minute story. I said, Mary, either you handle this or I'm going to. And she didn't handle it. So I taught my daughter. I said, okay, make a fist. And she tucked her thumb inside her fingers. I said, no, that's not how you make a fist. And I said, okay, throw a punch. It's just like throwing a baseball. Have her whack my hand. And I said, okay, now you punch him right in the nose one time. He bites you, you punch him right in the nose one time. When you punch somebody in the nose, their eyes will automatically tear up. So you punch him in the nose, you step back and you laugh at him and you say, you're crying because a little girl hit you. Guess what? Johnny never bit anymore.
So she did that. She took that advice.
Yes, she did. And Mary, and I said, Mary, I told you, you didn't handle it. So I had to.
Well, I'll tell you what, that's an analogy to how we all have to deal with the bullies of this world. And we are being bullied by propaganda, and we have to fight back. And the way we do that is by raising our voices and speaking truth to power as best we understand it. And don't be afraid to speak your mind. You might be wrong, but then you can be right the next time. Am I right, Timothy?
100%. Amen. God bless you, Joseph.
God bless you, Timothy Shea. Thanks for coming on. It's been wonderful chatting with you again this evening. And I'm wondering if your friend found a date. Oh, he left. Anyway.
No.
All right, everybody. Oh, go ahead. Now you're still there. Oh, we got to go, probably. Yo, I'm wondering if your friend
looking for a date?
The girl you said that can't find a guy. But we got 10 seconds, so I got to take it out. Yeah. All right, Timothy, thanks for coming on. Thanks for listening to TNT. We'll see you guys tomorrow.